Torah Kuf Yud Aleph in Likutei Moran Tanina. In our Likutei Moran, it's page 99 of the second half, the right-hand column, about the middle of the page. Rav Nosson Zal writes, Echod Shoal Oisoi Be'inyan Hanhogas Hiskarhus Lashem Yisborach. One of Rabbeinu Zal's students asked him about how to deal with trying to come close to Hashem. V'tzivo loy lilmoid. And Rabbeinu Zal commanded him to learn. Rabbeinu Zal stressed to him the importance of learning. Rabbeinu Zal stressed to him that in order to come close to Hashem, one of the main things you need is to learn Torah. The Gemara says, V'loy amoretz chosid, that an ignoramus cannot be very religious. V'shoal oisoi, and this person asked Rabbeinu Zal, Haloi eini yochoi lilmoi, but I can't learn. Either I don't know how to learn, or for whatever reason the person said, I can't learn. Heshiv loy, and Rabbeinu Zal replied to him, Al yedei tefila yecholim lovoi lakoil. Through tefila, a person can get to everything. L'chol tuv, to anything that's good. L'toira v'avoido, u'l'chol hakdushois, u'l'chol ha'avoidois, u'l'chol ha'toivois shebechol ho'ilamois. Through tefila, a person can get to Torah, a person can get to serve Hashem, a person can get to every type of holiness that's available, and a person can get to every type of good that's available in all the different worlds. Period. And this statement is one of the yesodos, one of the foundations in Rabbeinu Zal's ideology, in what Rabbeinu Zal said if a person wants to be successful in life, whether it be religiously, whether it be physically, financially, anything, to know that the key is tefillah. Everything that a person wants and needs is dependent on tefillah, meaning that basically we assume that everything comes from Hashem. What's going to determine how smart you are, how dumb you are, how successful you are in doing mitzvahs, not doing mitzvah? Who's in a position to block you from doing any mitzvah or to open all doors for you and give you straight green lights all the way? It's Hashem. What effort is required on our part in order to make it happen? Minimal. Very minimal effort. Tefillah. Person has to ask Hashem every single day that Hashem should help the person to be zecher to do what they have to do on that day. I see a new day in front of me, new opportunities. The Gemara says, Yesh koino ilamoi b'sho achas, that there exists a situation in this world that a person that's living in this world is privileged, that in 1 hour you can do something that can get you olam haba, eternity. And the Gemara tells stories where this happened. There were people that did things where within an hour he got the entire Olam Haba. He corrected a whole lifetime worth of mistakes and everything. Once we're told that, which person wouldn't want to have that hour? Which person wouldn't want to have that kind of success? Elamai, you have to ask for it. A person has to ask Hashem. A person has to make Hashem aware that we believe that the opportunity that's available in this world is unbelievable. The Gemara says that yofo sha'achas b'olam hazeh, 1 hour in this world is worth more than all the Gan Edens. Because in 1 hour in this world, you can do something that can get you more than all the Gan Eden that exists right now. So the question is, how do I get to know what to do in that hour? Each and every person has to ask Hashem, because obviously, what Hashem wants me to do is not necessarily the same as what He wants you to do or Him to do. Each person has a different function within this world as to what we're supposed to accomplish. Yisrael asher becho espoir, the Pasuk says, the Jewish nation where Hashem sees a beauty in us. Beauty isn't when a room is painted all blue or all red. Beauty is when it's a combination of colors that blend together properly and beautifully. Beauty is not one instrument playing. Beauty is when you have an orchestra with a few different instruments that are blending together perfectly. They're not necessarily playing the same tune. The harmony is on a different track completely. But it's designed with seichel that when these two things are mixed together, the combination sounds beautiful. So too in terms of the nation of Hashem. Hashem doesn't necessarily expect each one to be doing the same thing. Not necessarily. Definitely does not expect the same thing from each of us. How is a person supposed to figure out exactly what does Hashem want for me? The answer is just about impossible. person has to ask Hashem for that. A person has to ask Hashem, show me exactly what you would want for me. What kind of nachas can I give you? What kind of nachas can my children give you? So that a person should know what to do with their life. And Rabbi Nazal stresses here that through tefillah, a person can get to everything, so that no person could think that they're going to have an excuse to say, I couldn't give tzedakah, I couldn't learn, I couldn't do this mitzvah, I couldn't do. That's not an option. If you can't do it, daven Hashem, ask Hashem to be zeche to do it. And if you'll daven really properly, with real sincerity, either one of two things will happen. Either you'll be able to do it 100%, or for sure, for positive, you won't be liable, you won't be held responsible for why you couldn't do it. Because at least I did what I could do to be able to be zeche to do this. Person has trouble getting up in the morning, person has trouble learning, whatever it is. Person has to ask Hashem to be zeche to that thing. Person has to study themselves very carefully, analyze constantly what's missing in me, what am I not so good at, what am I terrible at, and see to be mashlim it through tefillah. Then Rabbi Nazal adds here, Pam Echod, Rabbi Nosson Zal writes, Pam Echod Omar, one time Rabbi Nazal made this statement. He said, Im hoyu menichin mes lo'ilam haze lehispalel, bevadai hoyu mespalel yofe yofe b'chol koichoi. If Hashem would let a person that died already come back to this world to daven, boy, would you see how well that person would daven. Implying that out of all, now the question is, can't you say this about any? It seems that there's a difference. It seems that when it comes to tefillah, that's something which it's just about impossible for us to have a real, real, true appreciation for it. It's only once a person passes away and they get to the next world, that's when they first begin to understand and realize how great tefillah is, how much they could have accomplished with tefillah. And that's why Rabbi Nazal made this point, if you would ever see a dead person come back into this world for a second, he would be allowed to daven, boy, would you see what kind of tefillah he would give forth. And this again is a pinch for us, to know that we who are privileged, that this is available to us. It's available to us three times a day, Shachris, Minchan, Marav. It's available to us to say Tehillim, Likutei Tefilos, these other Sifrei Tefilos. It's available to each and every one of us that has spoiled us to speak to Hashem, your own language, your own Tefilos. We have to take it very, very seriously. Because the Gemara refers to this item of tefillah as Dvorim Ha'imdim Berumai Shalaylam. It's way, way, way on top. V'ha'olam mezalzalin bo. And people don't take it seriously enough. People make fun of it. People are cheap. They take it cheaply. And all a person has to do is look around. You have to look around you during davening and watch people, even people that are knowledgeable in Torah. There are very, very, very few people outside of those that are privileged to learn Rabbein Azal Sforin that are people. The fact that this item that's so important and so critical and everything depends on it, and for some reason the people can't get it together. They can't get it into their brains that this is so critical. This hour that I'm going to be spending davening, I have to block out everything else from my mind and I have to really turn it on. I have to apply myself mentally, physically, get my whole body and mind together to produce a tefillah that's at least the best that I can do. It's not a tefillah that's going to compare to what the big tzaddikim did. I'm not looking for that. I'm looking to at least produce the best tefillah that I possibly can. And that's the point that Rabbi Nazal is trying to bring across in this Torah.
What would be the difference then? There are people that get what they need without praying, and there are people who get what they need praying. What would be the difference of receiving something through tefillah and receiving something without tefillah?
Very good, solid question. This question Rav Nosson Zal asks in Likutei Halacha is, what are you giving me this whole speech about tefillah when I look around me and I see among Jews, and especially lahavdil among Goyim, they eat and sleep, they have food, they have clothing. What are you telling me that the food and clothing comes through tefillah if I see people that don't pray at all, or they pray very little or without kavon and they have it? And Rav Nosson Zal answers very clear and to the point, that there are animals in this world that are also being nourished by Hashem, being provided, cows, birds, worms, bugs, lizards, all of these things are being provided by Hashem. The nourishment that they're given from Hashem, in a spiritual sense, in no way in the world resembles the type of nourishment that a human being is supposed to receive from Hashem. In other words, he uses the terminology, there's a shefa of a behemah and a shefa of an odom. And it's two different things. Rav Nosson Zal writes that any person that receives from Hashem without tefillah, what they are receiving is the shefa of a behemah, meaning Hashem is providing for them the same way and on the same level that He provides for animals. The kasha to us, it looks the same. We look at this millionaire who's not religious, he doesn't pray this, that, and it looks like he's got the same money or the same shirts. He buys the same size shirts. It's two different things completely. Physically, it could look the same. Spiritually, they're billions of miles apart. And Rav Nosson Zal says, if a person wants to elevate themselves to a point where they'll know that the shefa that Hashem is giving them is called the shefa of an odom, shefa of a human being, the key to that is tefillah. And this is one of the distinctions that he makes between anything. If I go out and buy a pair of shoes and I didn't ask Hashem for those shoes, it means those shoes are in a sense shefa behema. It's on a much lower level than if I would have taken out a moment before I walked into the store to say, Hashem, this store isn't going to give me shoes and it's not the money in my pocket. Shoes, everything that a person gets in this world comes from you. And I want to acknowledge that. Before I go into the store, I want to say, Hashem, please give me a pair of shoes. Sounds silly? Sounds immature? The Zohar HaKadosh says that one of the Tanoim, before he would sit down to eat, there was a meal prepared in the dining room. His wife had the food on the table. Before he was about to walk from the kitchen into the dining room to start eating, he would say, Tefillah Hashem, Hashem, please provide me with food. I need food to give me the strength and energy to go the next 12 hours or whatever it is. He would ask, why? The Zohar HaKadosh explains, because in doing it that way, the food that he ate had a whole different effect on him than somebody that didn't do it this way. You could imagine that the connection that a person's making to Hashem in this way elevates everything they're doing to a whole different madrega. Proof is that when we discuss the levels of creation, doimem tzomeach chai medaber, the distinction of human beings are classified by this title, medaber. According to your dibur, that's what determines whether you're in this category of humans or non-humans.
So in other words, if you got something from tefillah, it gives you a different effect, a spiritual effect on you. That, in other words, it has a life-giving effect, whereas the thing that you got for a free gift has a negative effect or neuter.
Or effect. Exactly. 1 second.
Doesn't the animals make shoes for us, give us food to eat? So shouldn't the animals be on a higher degree than us? Because they're the animals, we wouldn't get anything to eat because it should be left that way.
We once had a whole shiur about that. The question is, we once had a shiur saying that it's brought in Sforim that there were certain philosophers that said that this that shows that human beings are above animals are the fact that we eat them. When somebody eats something else, it shows that they rule over that item. It shows that I'm the boss over that item. It's not, if I eat a piece of cake, you can't tell me the piece of cake is the boss over me. Obviously, the fact that I eat it, I'm able to devour it, and it becomes part of me, that shows that I have rulership over that. So the Sforim answer, that's not necessarily such a simple thing, because if that were the case, then the worms should be the rulers over human beings, because when a person passes away, people are eaten up by the worms. People become food for worms. So should we say that they rule their our bosses? On that same logic, we should say that they're a level above us. And we see that that's not necessarily the case. This is why the Gemara says, in teaching a person modesty, we're reminded of the fact that El Ofer Toshev, that we're going to return to dust, so that therefore this humbles you in knowing that just like you eat, you feel like a boss over what you're eating, like the big fish that eats the small fish, showing that the big fish rules over the small fish. So too, person has to know humbleness, that we can't consider ourselves above worms. So in a way we have to be, but the fact that they provide us nourishment, the fact that we eat them and we get nourishment, the nourishment isn't coming from them, the nourishment is coming from Hashem. Proof is there are people that eat and eat and they get sick and they die. Because somehow something is wrong inside. Hashem made something go out of balance in their body, that even though they're eating and eating, the food isn't doing what it's supposed to do.
There's a type of tefillah that's cited that is not a tefillah that is sensible or even should be said. The type of tefillah where, let's say, you hear a fire engine, you're like walking down your block and you hear a fire engine, you say at that point, oh, I hope it's not my house or something like that. So take the case of, on the opposite scale, take the case of the Tana, who had his meal prepared, the daven, oh, Hashem, give me food. Isn't that sort of like a... You know, it would be...
The answer is there's a fine line between the two. The Gemara says if a person hears people saying, Rahman al-Tzlan, somebody died, and the person died already, for a Jew to say, I hope it's not in my house, that's a tefilas shov, because it happened already. For you to say, I pray that it shouldn't be in my house, it happened already. It's something that you can't normally change, and therefore it's sort of a tefilas shov. Here it seems obvious that what he was davening for was not the literal translation that Hashem should give him the physical food, because that was already laid out on the table. He was davening, he was showing that his faith is that even once the food is already on the table, that food could have positive effects on me or negative effects. How many times are there that a person sits down, eats a delicious meal, and they get sick for a week afterwards? They have indigestion, they have blood poisoning, Rahman al-Islam, all the different harmful things that could happen. What he was implying in his tefillah was, he was stressing that anything I get, I'm not going to take it from any place other than Hashem. And even when it's put on the table for me, don't think I feel like I'm taking it from the table. I'm taking it from Hashem. That kind of attitude. That was the attitude. That's not a tefillah shor. It's not as if he was saying, Hashem, please give me food, implying that he doesn't have when he does. He was implying that, Hashem, don't think that because I see the food in front of me, I think it's coming from my wife, or I'm eating from the table. I'm eating from you. I want the... And if I'm eating from you... From Hashem, it's only good. Mi pi elyon lo teitzei haro ki matoiv, the pasuk says, that from above only good comes forth.
And two questions. One is that when we're already making a bracha, whatever it is, it's already a recognition that Hashem is giving us the food. And I remember Perush in my first day in Yeshiva, that you're asking Hashem for permission to eat this food, or you're giving him you.
Acknowledging that it comes from Hashem.
So my thought is, isn't this getting a little bit, it's the obvious thing, isn't it getting a little ridiculous? You're already making a bracha, you're already giving Hashem the acknowledgement, yet you're also doubling for it, so why, I'm superfluous, right?
What's the second
question is that so in the time of Eliyahu, if I'm not mistaken, that Chizkiyahu Novi was once reprimanded. I have this problem personally, that's why I'm asking. Chizkiyahu Melech was once reprimanded really seriously for praying to Hashem in an improper way and non-covetic way. It was like a prayer in the street, if I remember the terminology. I don't know if you ever came across this. And there's another thing which bothers me, having brought the context in our lives. It's a thing that we all could be very mixed on, because we do if we do fall according to Das of Rav Nassim or Nachman, the Holy Rebbe, we got to be careful that we don't fall into this place. And it seems to be very easy.
Of praying in the street?
Well, yeah, praying in the street, but in a way that it's not proper. You see, the question is, how does one give kavod to Hashem to reach a level of real, that why was Chizkiyahu Melech reprimanded?
Okay.
Seriously.
Okay. To answer the first question first, as far as the fact that we make a bracha on food, so isn't that enough praying for the food? The answer is there's a statement in the Gemara in Brachas where the Gemara says, Halavai sheispalalu kol hayom kulay. Hashem says, Halavai, people would daven all day, which means that when it comes to tefillah, There's no such thing as saying, isn't this enough? The more the merrier. And there's no question at all that the bracha is a very good thing, but the bracha is a very standard thing. Rav Nosson Zal writes, just as though this is the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Tefillah that the Shachris Mincha and Marav that we have, and all the Tefillahs that the rabbis of the Gemara were misaking, were to be used as crutches. Because originally, when Avram Avinu was alive, when those tzaddikim were alive, at that time people used to pray 6, 9, 12 hours a day. This is what the Rambam Zal writes as fact. When the rabbis saw that the generations were getting weaker, and if they would leave it up to people themselves to design their own tefillos, they were starting to get much smaller and smaller. So the Chachamim prepared a structure for people to follow in terms of Shachris, Mincha, Maariv, for people to know to follow these basic guidelines. However, the Rambam Zal writes very clearly, but still, there's no question at all that the more important and most meaningful full part of the tefillah is your own personal tefillahs. Besides the Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv that you're going to daven, it's the addition that you're going to be doing. This is the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchas Tefillah, and this is what Rabbeinu Zal quotes and Rav Nosson Zal quotes, and they stress very much. Still, the most important is what you yourself do, because it's obvious why, not besides the mystical reasons, push it. Because the kind of kavona that a person has when they're creating their own tefillah is usually much more than if you're repeating words that somebody else wrote, somebody else made. So there's no question that the bracha is important and you must have kavona. And the more you can add to that, besides the bracha, any tefillahs that a person says, asking Hashem, acknowledging that everything comes from Hashem, and therefore if I acknowledge that this food comes from Hashem nothing can harm me. If something really comes from Hashem, there's no way this could do any damage to me, and therefore I ask Hashem that the food that I'm eating now should give me only strength, it should only have positive effects on my body, etc., etc. That could only help, no question at all. As far as the second point that you said, that Chizkiyahu HaMelech was reprimanded for the way that he davened, there's no question that there are certain guidelines that a person has to know in terms of tefillah. There are sforim that are written, the Sefer Hishtapchus HaNefesh, for example, is a likut, gathering together just about all the advice that Rabbeinu Zal gave as to how to daven, what to say, where to say it, when to say it, how to prepare the before, the after. All of that is described pretty well. The most important nekud of it being humbleness. If a person comes before Hashem with humbleness and with sincerity, usually, there's no way in the world that what that person is going to say is not going to find favor in Hashem, in the eyes of Hashem. There's a story told, not told, there's a story written in the Kisvei Arizal, that one of the Arizal's Talmidim was once traveling, and he passed by the home of a certain person, some farmer who was davening to Hashem, and the farmer was talking in a way that seemed as disrespectful as could be imagined by this student of the Arizal. And this student reprimanded him and said, "How dare you speak to the Hashem in such a way, to the Creator of the world in such a way? Don't you realize that this is arrogance? This is ugly? Close your mouth." And he reprimanded him very severely. This was a tzaddik, one of the students of the Arizal. That night, this student of the Arizal had a dream. He was told in the dream that he's not going to complete his year. Because the nachas that Hashem was getting from the tefillah of this farmer, there wasn't anything that had come to pass since the time that the Beis HaMikdash was around, the karbonos were being brought, and therefore his only tikkun is, because as soon as the farmer heard this, he shut up, that was it, he figured, the end, I'll never open my mouth up again to Hashem. And he was shown in a dream that if he doesn't start davening again, you're finished. Because the nachas that Hashem is getting from his tefillah, the sincerity that he's putting into his tefillah, stands way, way above the kavonos and other things. And this is written in the writings of the Arizal, Lemaisa. This isn't written as something as a cute story. For us to know that the ikar shebikrim in tefillah is the sincerity. If a person is really sincere, naturally, the more a person can learn about what's proper, what's improper, it's definitely better. After all the learning, You have to go back to simplicity and sincerity. You open up a Sefer Tehillim and you see the way Dovid HaMelech speaks to Hashem. You can't get more sincere and simple and humble than that. And the Gemara says he was the greatest Talmud Chacham in his generation, etc. That was his, that was how he presented himself to Hashem in order for Hashem to be most receptive to his tefillah. The question is that we said that regarding the tefillos, it was only later on that the Anshei Knesset Hagdola were misaking that everybody has to say these tefillos, Shachris Minchamarav. The answer is Avram Avinu was misaking it, but it wasn't necessarily accepted by all the people. And it wasn't presented as halacha lemaisa that every person had to daven shachris from that time on. It was the Anshei Knesset Hagdola who came along. They were the ones who set up clear rules and boundaries that anybody that wants to be considered an Orthodox Jew has to daven three times a day, this and this time, this and this way, all of those halachas. Baruch Hashem. Torah Kuf Yud Beis. Again, very short and very, very critical, very significant in terms of Rabbeinu Zal's way of thinking. Le'inyan Hizchazkus, as far as Rabbeinu Zal giving a person strengthening, chizuk, support when a person's feeling down and broken, leval yipoil hotam bedatoi machmas ribui hapigomim vakilkulim shekilkel aide myself, meaning so that a person should not fall, a person shouldn't feel down about all the many, many sins and averos and pigomim and mistakes that the person did throughout his life. Ono vi omar, Rabbeinu Zal spoke up and he said these words. Ima tomamin sheyecholin lekalkel, ta'amin sheyecholin lesakein. If you believe that it's within the power of a human being to mess up, then you must equally believe that it's within the power of a human being to fix up, implying that it's either or. If you want to say, I'm such a zero because I did so many things wrong, I did so many terrible things and bring yourself into a depression, if you're such a zero, then whatever you did wrong didn't really matter, because if a zero does something wrong, it's nothing. And if you are something, if you do consider yourself something of any kind of value, then whatever power you have to botch up, to spoil, to mess up, you have to know that automatically it's to be assumed that you also have the power to clean up and to fix up and to correct. And Rabbeinu Zal said this as a very serious piece of advice, so that if the Satan is going to come knocking on anybody's door and try to convince them at any point in time that they did something that can't be fixed, that there's no tshuva for this, anything like that, to know that that's not accepted. That's not to be accepted. That Rabbeinu Zal has already stated, fact, that you messed up, you can fix up. However big a mess you made, you destroyed a million, you have the power to fix a million. And this is a yesoid in Yiddishkeit. If a person is Jewish, person's Orthodox, they have to know this, because every single Jew experiences kilkulim. Every single Jew makes mistakes and does certain things that are wrong. And unless a person really believes this firmly, at some point in time, he can start drifting and slipping and forgetting everything. And Rabbeinu Zal said here, you have to catch yourself and remind yourself, I fell 30 levels, it's within my power to climb back up 30 levels. I did 30,000 sins, it's within my power to correct 30,000 sins, positively.
I think that this is more with Breslov than with any other, with a lot of other people, they believe that there's a lot which they can't repair.
This axiom is stressed by Rabbeinu Zal. Now, I'll tell you an interesting item. It's not only, a person would say, well, maybe Rabbi Nachman is just saying his own thing and this has no basis anywhere else. I'll give you the perfect example. There is one sin in the entire Torah where the Zohar HaKadosh says that although tshuva helps for everything, there's one sin for which tshuva doesn't help. These are the words of the Zohar HaKadosh. The Shiloh HaKodesh, the author of the Shnei Luchos HaBris, who is known, anybody that knows that Sefer and knows Shulchan Aruch, knows that he is considered a very, very extreme machmir. In all items of halacha, his advice to his children was, listen, life is short. What are you going to be living? 80 years? 90 years? Why bother playing with compromises? Why bother relying on any kulos at all? If somebody told you you're going to have to do this for 1,000,000 years, you could say, oh, it's very difficult. If you know it's only 80, 90 years that you have to put up with it, why not take the strictest view in any question of halacha or any question pertaining to religion? This was the Shulah HaKodesh's basic ideology that's presented throughout his Sefer. This Machmir writes in his Sefer that those words in the Zohar HaKodesh are written just as a test. So that if a person committed that sin, he has to see that it's written about him in this very religious book that he can't come back, and he's got to know to ignore it and come back, and he definitely can come back. So we see that, again, it's not something that Rabbeinu Zal invented from the Luft. There is basis for it in other Sforim. Rabbeinu Zal brought it out very, very clear in such a way that nobody can say that this isn't written for me, this doesn't apply to me. This applies across the board, anybody, any type of sin, any number of times, or any type of mistake, any number of times. Person has to get it clear in their head, I can and will correct whatever I have to.
Someone probably fall to Yeshua if he did a type of thing that destroyed something. Let's say he murdered somebody, Chas v'Shalom, or whatever. Did even his bid is what Hitler did, whatever. And a person would see that, how can I bring these people back or rectify what was wrong? So this is why a person would find difficulty and hard to get this into his head.
Okay. We gave shiurim about this. Well, we gave examples. The three worst sins in Judaism basically are Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shfichas Damim. Shfichas Damim, murder. A murderer, can you do tshuva for killing somebody? The Torah says, the Gemara says clearly that there was a butcher by the name of Nevuzaradon. What did he butcher? He didn't butcher cows or ox. He butchered people. He butchered Jews. He killed thousands of Jews. The Gemara in Gittin, talking about the Churban Beis Hamikdash, tells the whole story of what happened. He saw the blood of Zechariah Navi bubbling, and he said, who did this? They didn't want a whole story. Ended the bottom line, he started shechting Jews. And the Gemara said there were rivers of blood flowing from this shechita that this goy did. The Gemara says after he finished his whole job, he finally said to the blood, if you're not satisfied with all the thousands of people I killed, I'll erase the whole Jewish nation now. So the Gemara says, then the blood stopped bubbling and it seeped into the ground and it came to rest, the blood of Zechariah Novi. So the Gemara says, then this Nevuzaradan hit himself in the head and said, hold on a second. The Jews killed one tzaddik, this Zechariah Novi, and out of revenge for this, Hashem had so many thousands, tens of thousands of Jews killed. What's he going to do to me? I'm the one who killed tens of thousands of Jews. What did he do? Say it's all over for me? No. The Gemara says he went ahead and converted and became a Jew and did tshuva. And the Gemara says that from him came forth rabbis, that from his descendants came forth rabbis who taught Torah to the Jewish people. So we see clearly that it's possible for a goy to commit murder, to murder many Jews, and there's a potential of tshuva even for that. Gilui Arayos, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, tells the story of Rabbi Elozar ben Dordaya. The Gemara says there wasn't a single illicit woman in the world whom he wasn't known to her. He hadn't visited her. The Gemara tells a whole long story. Bottom line, he did complete tshuva. An announcement came out from Shemayim saying, Ashrecho Rebbe Elozar ben Dordaya, that you are going into Olam Haba. Avodah Zarah, we have the example of Yisro. Ato yodati ki godol Hashem mikol ha'elokim. The Gemara says that Yisro made a statement, Ato yodati ki godol Hashem mikol ha'elokim. I acknowledge now that Hashem is greater than all other things that are being worshipped in the world. The Gemara says, how did he know? How did he know about all others? The Gemara says that he was a muncha. There wasn't a single idol in the world that he hadn't worshipped, period. And we see Yisroel did tshuva to such an extent that the Torah praises him. There's a whole section in the Torah that was contributed through Yisroel, the parasha of Ya'ata Serse. And he's the one who's credited with Matan Torah on Har Sinai. No question about it. So this is the extent that we see the Torah praises. The Torah says that there's a potential of tshuva for anything. That there's nothing at all that a person can't do tshuva for. Next Torah. We're up to Torah Kuf Yud Gimel. Rabbi Nezal says, Mi sherak misnoitz etzloi Hashem yisborach. A person who has the tiniest feeling in them about Hashem, kishe'ose chas v'shalom afilu dovor echod sheloi karoi b'shlemus, when that person does one thing that's not 100%, klemar, it's in parentheses now, this means to say, af al pi she'ein bo zeh hadovor shum nitnu daveru chas v'shalom. We're talking about even if this one thing doesn't have any trace of an avera in it. And it's not that it's talking about a physical, gashmius base kind of desire. Rak she'enoi oisa adovar betachlis shlemus hakdusha koroi boemes. We're talking about a person who does a certain item in life, whatever it is, and he doesn't do it with 100% purity, with 100% perfection. Roy loy shetichle nafshoy legamri me oitzem hacharoto vahabusha. It would be proper that that person should feel his neshama going out of him from the tremendous embarrassment and regret he feels for the fact that he did one thing that wasn't 100% great, 100% perfect in the eyes of Hashem. This is Rabbein Azal's perception of how a Jew is supposed to feel. Rabbein Azal makes a statement here. He's not saying that this applies to a tzaddik. Rabbein Azal says that a person who has the slightest feeling of acknowledgement about a Hashem in the world, that there is a Hashem, such a person, when he does something in life, not an avera, not a taiva, he goes on a bus, and he doesn't do it 100% the way a Jew is supposed to do it, with the right derech eretz, and with the right manners, and all the different things as to how a person that does acknowledge the presence of Hashem is supposed to act. Rabbein Azal says the person should feel that literally their neshama is going out from how embarrassed and how regretful a person feels from the fact that they weren't 100% perfect within the presence of a Hashem, the Melech Malchi Amlochem HaKodesh Baruch Hu. And again, this is being told to us to give us an idea that when it comes to a tzaddik like Rabbein Azal, you picture his perception of Hashem. So Rabbein Azal is giving us an idea based on a tzaddik's perception of Hashem. This is the kind of seriousness and this is the kind of awareness that a Jew is supposed to be walking around with. A person is so conscious of a presence of Hashem, this supreme being that created everything and rules everything and everything comes from him, and he has the right to insist. Picture when a person's in a room with a king, when a person's in a room with a president, a person stands with his shirt out, or a person will say something dumb, a person won't think before they open their mouth and say something to anybody at that time. There's a certain awareness that there's somebody that's so important in the room that there's no way in the world you would do anything that's a little bit off balance, a little bit off the mark. Rabbein Azal says, Alachas kama v'kama, when it comes to Hashem, if a person has the slightest realization that there is a Hashem, and that Hashem is omnipresent, and He's everywhere, and He sees everything, and knows everything, and hears everything, and He sees what's going on in your mind, and in your heart, and everything, and a person's aware of that, a person should be able to regret and to feel completely embarrassed, 100% embarrassed, for the slightest thing that they do that's not perfect. Therefore, no room for any arrogance, no room for any gaiva, no room for a person saying, well, it's hard for me to consider myself small, it's hard for me to feel sorry. Rabbeinu Zal saying here very clearly, if you had one iota of a realization of a Hashem, you would find it very easy to be 100% regretful and 100% embarrassed for the slightest wrongdoing or the slightest imperfection. And if you don't feel that way, if we see that when we do the slightest thing wrong, we don't feel 100% embarrassed and we don't feel 100% regretful, obviously, we are not in the category of mi sherak misnoitzitz lo Hashem isborach. We're not in the category of ones who have the slightest awareness of Hashem. And therefore, a person has to beg Hashem, let me be zeichet to be in this category that Rabbeinu Zal describes here. Mi sherak misnoitzitz lo Hashem isborach. To have the slightest awareness and consciousness of a presence of Hashem. Because Rabbeinu Zal is saying, when you get to that level, you'll see that when you realize you did the tiniest thing wrong, you'll see that you'll feel so sorry and so terrible, you'll be prepared to give up your life for the fact that you did something slightly imperfect. And that's the madrega that a person should... These are the levels that we should know exist in this world. These are the levels that tzaddikim are on in terms of their awareness of Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Any questions? Okay.
Did it seem like perhaps because terror, like did he use the order of these terrors? It seems it's almost like the Hischaskus is terrors as opposed to the previous one.
Very possible. I believe that he's definitely the one who made the order, and that there definitely is a significance into where each thing fits in here. The fact that one paragraph is giving us tremendous chizuk, that the person who feels the lowest person is being picked up, lifted up, and being told, no matter how many things you did wrong, don't worry about it, you can fix it up. And the next paragraph, we're being told that if you had the slightest iota of a realization about Hashem, you would be a billion times different than what you are. Person is being kept in check, not to fall out at the bottom, and at the same time not to feel too big, not to feel big at all whatsoever. That Rabbi Meir Acher was one of the Tanoim of the Gemara, and the Gemara says there was a whole story where he and three other rabbis went up to a very, very high level in Shemayim, and as a result he saw something that he didn't understand, and he became an apikleris. He started doing all kinds of averos. He started killing children, the Gemara says, all kinds of terrible things that he did. And the Gemara says that when his Talmud, Rabbi Meir, said to him, Rabbi, please come back, Acher said to him, I can't come back. Because there's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Shuvu vonim shevovim. All the children that have gone off the path, that did terrible things, come back. And I once heard a baskel from Shemayim. Acher said, I heard a baskel from Shemayim that said, Shuvu vonim shevovin chutz me'acher. Anybody that wants to come back can come back except Acher. He heard a voice from Hashem say that anybody that wants to come back can come back except for Acher. So the question is, hold on a second. If he heard Hashem say that, what should he have done? Tosfos says in the Gemara, he should have ignored it. Because even if Hashem tells a person you can't come back, Hashem doesn't mean it. That's your test. Your test is you have to be thrown out and say, don't come back! Don't ever come back! And you have to come back after that. And when you come back after you were thrown out and told don't come back, it's very, very embarrassing when you walk back into the room. Very embarrassing. And you have to be able to do it and accept the embarrassment and stay there. We once mentioned Rebbe Zal told over from the Baal Shem Tov HaKodesh a beautiful, beautiful short bomb. There's a Gemara that says that when a person is a guest in somebody else's home, kol ma she'er melecho balabayis asei chutz mitzei. When you're a guest by somebody else in their house, whatever they tell you to do, you must listen to them. Except if he says get out. If somebody invites you to their house for lunch and they say, please come over, I'd like to have you for lunch, and then in the middle of the meal the guy says, get out, you're supposed to tell him, sorry, Charlie, meal's not over. You know, you have to. The Torah says that when you invite somebody, you can't throw them out in the middle of the invitation. This is what the Gemara says. The Baal Shem Tov said, I'll show you who this applies to, who else this applies to. Who is the Balabais of the whole world? Hashem. All of us are considered to be guests of Hashem in a sense in this world. We're all benefiting from Hashem's kindness. Kol ma she'er melecho Balabais asay. Anything that the Balabais, Hashem, tells you to do, you're required to listen to him. Chutz, except, mitzay. Except if Hashem says, get out. If Hashem says, get out, I don't want you anymore, that you're not required to listen to. Even if Hashem says it, Hashem doesn't mean it. Because there's no way in the world that Hashem wants a Russia to be eliminated. Hashem wants the Russia to do tshuva. Hashem wants the Russia to come back.
This also applies when a person is put to cherem.
That what? That even then there's a concept of tshuva, a concept of...
You should say sorry, I'm not getting out.
True, he has to abide by the laws. If there's a cherem imposed on him by a court, he has to follow the laws, but not to say that I'm leaving the religion, chas v'shalom, or not to say that I'm not going to do tshuva and get them to take me out of the cherem and come back, 100%. Changing his mind. Changing your mind means when first I say this, and I mean this, and then I think it over and I say, oh, I don't want that, I decided now I want it this way. We're saying that when Hashem says get out, he's just saying it as a test to the person. To see, is the person going to be silly and dumb and think, okay, Hashem said get out, I have to get out. So he goes away and he doesn't come back. And he doesn't realize he was a fool. He was very foolish. Because that's not what Hashem meant. Hashem meant that he should feel very embarrassed. He should feel that he did something so terrible that he's worthy of being thrown out in the garbage. But Hashem wants him to come back. And if he comes back and does tshuva, he could climb to a level that's very, very high. That's what Hashem means when he says, get out. Torah Kuf Yudalad. Rav Nosanzal writes, Pam Echod, Dibarti Imoi Zichron Avrecha. One time I was talking to Rav Nosanzal, Vehivanti Shoyechofetz Ma'oid Legalisli Ezedovar Mehasagoysev Shehisig, Kedarkoi Tomid. And when I was talking to Rav Nosanzal, I saw that he was very deep in thought, and I saw that he wanted to tell me something that was very, very deep. That he was about to tell me something that was very, very deep, as had happened many times. Rav Nosanzal was used to this, being in Rabbeinu Zal's presence, and Rabbeinu Zal would be thinking of something very deep, and getting it organized in his mind, and then he would start talking, and he would reveal something that was very, very deep. Achoye kosha olov. But I saw that it was very difficult for Rabbeinu Zal to bring this out. So I walked with Rabbeinu Zal in silence. I didn't interrupt him. I was quiet, hoping that maybe it'll take a minute or something like that, and then Rabbeinu Zal will be able to reveal this. Because Rabbeinu Zal didn't say a word. I just was watching him, and I saw he was very deep in thought, and I could tell that he wanted to say something. And in the middle of this whole experience, Rabbeinu Zal said these words, Esot aponim az memuzich von ahirhur zeir hiten. It appears that a Jew has to watch himself very, very, very much from having a bad thought, from having any type of hirhur related to bad thoughts that the Torah speaks about related to women. Vehivanti oz milishenei hakodesh. Rav Nosanzal writes, I understood from the way Rabbeinu Zal was speaking, umitnuoisav hakdoshim be'ez shedibrezois, and from the motions that he made when he was saying these words, she'oz nizgalaloi bahasegoisav hanayrois, that at that moment it was revealed to Rabbeinu Zal in his very, very deep thoughts, oitzem pegam hahirur chas v'sholem, the depth, Rabbeinu Zal at that moment was zeichet to understand completely how great is the pigam of a hirhur, how terrible and how destructive it is when a Jew has a bad thought. Shepoigem ma'oid ma'oid rachmona litzlon, that this causes tremendous, tremendous destruction. Ve'i efsher letzayar zois b'chsav. And Rav Nosanzal writes, there's no way that I could describe this to you in writing what I saw at that time. In other words, he was walking with Rabbeinu Zal, and he saw Rabbeinu Zal was very, very deep in thought, and he saw that Rabbeinu Zal wanted to say something, but he couldn't. It was like too deep to be able to reveal. And then in the middle of this whole thing, Rabbeinu Zal said to him, it seems to me that a person has to be very, very, very careful from a hirhur, Rachmona Litzlan. And Rav Moshe Zal writes, he understood from the way Rabbeinu Zal was talking that at that moment he was masig, he achieved an understanding of the real, real depth of what's wrong, what's so terrible, and what happens when a person has a bad thought, Rachmona Litzlan. And we find in Likutei Halachos, in a few places, Rav Moshe Zal does go into a discussion based on the writings of the Arizal, explaining what exactly happens when a person has the wrong kind of thoughts about certain items, that you can actually draw a neshama into the world that has no body to enter into, and it's an unbelievable tragedy that there's nothing like it, Rachmon Hashem, because this becomes like a parasite trying to draw its life from the person, and the person doesn't have enough to give, and this becomes like a bloodsucker sucking the spiritual life out of the person. The fact that he forced the neshama to come into the world and it doesn't have a keli, doesn't have a body to go into, and all, etc., etc. Rav Moshe Zal elaborates on this in Likutei Halachos. But in any case, for us to know that Rav Moshe Zal, from this experience, got a gechapta tzitter, you say in Yiddish, he got a real feeling of awe as to how serious an item this is in terms of a Jew, chas v'shalom, having a hirhur. Baruch Hashem.
Does hirhur only mean pagamabris?
Usually, the word hirhur is stam, when it's used in this context, refers to tikkun habris, for sure.
Or hirhur, about a tzaddik or about a nedarim.
That's also considered hirhurim. That's also an inyan of bris. Rav Moshe Zal Likutei Halachos shows when a person sees a tzaddik doing something that they think is wrong, or that's also a form of chil habris. Because the tzaddik represents the epitome of tikkun habris. There's a pasuk in Tehillim where the pasuk says, "Sholach yodov b'shloimov chilel brisoi," that a person who stretches out his hand against shloimov, against the tzaddikim, chilel brisoi. That's considered an act of chil habris. Because the tzaddik represents the epitome of tikkun habris. An act against him is an act against tikkun habris. Literally, that's what it is.
Yes, you're wrong about the mother of Eris, not necessarily to a tzaddik, like to Kass or anything like that. If he has
right.
A hero of doing it, is that considered a hero where it's such a beta bear?
The answer is it's not necessarily the same as this, because usually the Gemara says that by goyim, if a goy has a thought of doing an avera, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzar of the machshava to maisa. The thought alone he gets credit for in avera, whereas by a Jew, it's not the case, except for Avodah Zarah and Chil HaBris, except for those two exceptions. However, we know, based on the Zohar HaKadosh, that whenever a person does something in this world, it has to pass through three stages, Machshava, Dibur, and Maisa. So if a person's thinking about an Avera, it means to a degree he's starting the process. So a person certainly has to try to be careful. One of the most phenomenally deep chapters in the Holy Likutei Moharan is Torah Mem Tes in Chelek Aleph. And there, Lashemesh Samoel Bohem, there Rabbeinu Zal discusses tremendous depth, the whole milchama that's going on inside a person between the Yitzrim. And there Rabbeinu Zal stresses that in terms of machshava, a person has to be very careful to be thinking only positive thoughts, only thoughts of mitzvah. And that can help a person very, very much. Just the thinking alone, I want to learn today, I want to be religious, I want to do, thinking it alone pulls a person in a very solid way towards good. Whereas if a person is thinking the opposite kind of thoughts, it creates a rope that draws the person, chas v'shalom, in the other direction. The answer is tshuva is mesaken. Tshuva fixes. It could exactly what it does, we don't necessarily understand in all cases. But we know that tshuva can fix anything. Again, the Gemara says that doesn't mean a person should say, well then fine, now I don't have to be afraid so much to do averus, because I know I could do tshuva afterwards. The Gemara says if a person takes that attitude, they'll see how difficult it is to do tshuva. It's not always so. Hashem can make it hard for the person. So a person's not supposed to be thinking that. It's only once a person did an Avera, they have to be aware of this. Baruch Hashem. As thinking to do a mitzvah, by a thought of doing a mitzvah, a person definitely does get credit. A yid definitely does get credit as if he did a mitzvah. Does get credit. A yid definitely does get credit as if he did a mitzvah.